Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality sector. And we're in London Docklands today at XL. We're actually recording in a pretty large meeting room, I have to say. So not a studio, so please bear with us if you have any sounds or air conditioning noises. So I'm sitting down today with four gentlemen, all represent suppliers of the Cedar Bond Purchasing Group, and we're going to be discussing around HRC, we're going to be discussing about quality products, and also we're going to talk about Cedar Bond, and I'm going to maybe put them under a bit of pressure for some fun questions. So I'm going to get on with the show, let the guests introduce themselves. Welcome everyone, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Nick, how are you? Welcome to the show, and I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thank you, Reverend. Hello, I'm Nick Rowe. I'm here today with Environmental Products and Services, the manufacturer of the Grease Shield. I've worked for the business now for just a little over a year.
Okay.
And we manufacture a product that removes animal fat, fog, grease, and dewaters the food waste that works in commercial kitchens. Also, in addition, we also have a product which filters out food waste as well. So we have a really interesting product that we're showing here today.
And you're here at the exhibition on the Cedar Bond
Pavilion. We're here on the Cedar Bond stand. This is the first time that we've actually sort of attended it as a group Cedar Bond style.
Okay.
Normally, we would attend on our own and have a stand singularly, but this is more of a group team Cedar Bond environment this year.
Okay, and we'll get on to like how it's been, but yeah. Nick, just for the listeners, a little bit of background about yourself, like where did you start your career?
And, gosh, well, going back, Radford, you know, I'm surprised.
Sort of snapshot, if you can.
I know that we are both sort of veteran forces chefs, albeit we didn't cross paths at those times back in the military. So I started as an apprentice chef in the forces in 84. Spent 10 years as a chef in the British Army. Had some very interesting roles in there, and finished my career as a private chef to a general. So it was quite an exciting career. I then left and did a little bit of catering in school catering, and then sort of decided that for me, coming into hospitality on sales was a journey that I fancied, and I've been applied for lots of jobs in the middle of the 90s until fortunately I started my career with Lockhart Catering Equipment, who at that time were the largest catering equipment company in the UK.
That's actually where I started as well.
Is it?
Okay.
Right. I think you've had a lot of people start
and an amazing company that was run by Joe Mullane back in the day.
Okay.
I then sort of had a great journey with them. They put a lot of investment into training. I then carried on with some design, other roles throughout. Then took a sort of sabbatical out of the industry. Well, the sabbatical came afterwards. I found my way into some money transfer business for a while, ran a sales director for Western Union for 4 years, and then took what was going to be a quick sabbatical, sort of coming up to my 40s, and that turned into a 15-year sort of trip over to Thailand, and which was was a lot of fun, and allowed me to do get out of my system, really. I think becoming a dad, having some children, and my child, and then came back 6 years ago back into the industry here. So I've worked for a couple of companies now, Grease Shield being on my second round with Grease Shield.
Okay. Obviously you're enjoying it.
Yeah, so it's a great product, and I enjoy having the opportunity to present how it saves block drains and what it can do for kitchens. It's a great product.
Okay. Well, Nick, thank you. So welcome to the show. I'll come back to you, of course, we'll get into that other group discussion. But Ludo.
Hey.
Welcome
guys.
To the show. How are you?
Very good. Thank you to having
I'll
me.
I'll let you introduce yourself. And
I'm Ludo Lantier. I work as a pastry chef most of my life, as a chef also. I was Ritz-Carlton boy, as they call it, for 10 years. And I'm representing, consulting, and I'm working for RoboCream. So it's a machine for chefs that are able to do, obviously, we're all about cost saving and also, same product every time. The consistency is always the same. You can do any choux pastry to pastry cream to gelato. Very interesting. Two men in Italy, they start selling the machines in France, and they were stuck in France for so many years because they were selling so much over there. They never came to the UK market and okay. Ireland. So I'm living in Ireland myself. We introduced the machine, and it's been very successful so far. It's actually I call it the sous chef machine, is actually does everything, and the consistency is always perfect.
So it's for choux pastry,
gelato. Pastry cream, gelato. You can do polenta.
I saw the choux buns around the show.
Yes, so I was doing some this morning. I did a Mont Blanc with, because I wanted to see that people can see the consistency of the pastry cream, how great it is in that machine. Because you can do a whole your best pastry cream, but you don't never know who in your team is going to make it as you walk.
Okay,
you know. So that machine it does the consistency, and you'll do exactly the same every time. So we had that with a bit of chestnut cream on top to just balance it up. It's called Mont Blanc in France. We had that very famous pastry.
Yeah.
So very exciting to be here, to be honest, and seeing a lot of people. It's my first time doing this exhibition in UK.
Okay.
I've done a few in Italy, France, and Ireland.
Yeah.
But so far it's been really good.
Good. And you're a chef by trade, obviously.
Yes.
You're here in your chef jacket, so.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm stating the obvious.
I'm actually.
But for the listeners, can't see that.
I'm still cooking, and I love my. I do a lot of. Consulting for restaurants. I help open restaurants. We just opened a rooftop, Dion, which is mean rooftop in Irish, in Dublin. And it's amazing. If you ever get a chance to visit us, let me know. I'll book you a table.
Okay,
but
fantastic.
We do 800 covers a day.
Whereabouts?
It's actually right in the city centre on Parliament Street. All the seats are a view of Dublin by night.
Oh, wow.
So it is quite
something,
to be fair. And the food is good, because you know what they say, you know, sometimes when the view is good, you know, you might be a bit disappointed on the food, but that's not the case for us. We really, really push. And I got that Robo Cream machine, and that was a game changing in terms of be able to do in a small space as well. So,
yeah.
It's been a big change on that. And then the quality, because it's actually that machine was starting as only ice cream. They were making ice cream only.
Oh, and out of that machine, okay.
They start making pastry cream with it, and choux pastry is the last one, really. So, it's been going very well so far.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Ludo. Welcome to the show, and we'll come back to you in a moment, if that's okay.
Cheers.
So, Soft, how are you? Welcome to the show. I know we've spoken quite a lot on LinkedIn, but how are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. And so I'm Soph. I work for Samick. So we are a manufacturer of quality catering equipment. I look after the southern region of the UK.
Okay.
And those equipment that we kind of manufacture ourselves, it ranges from warewashing. So that goes all the way from your undercounters, your pass-throughs, your rack machines, pot washers. So very comprehensive range. Food prep, that's where the business all started with the humble potato peeler back in 61.
Right, okay.
And we're, as far as I know, I think we are the number one potato peeler seller in the world.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I've been told. So we do quite a lot of potato peelers. And we do all those veg prep machines, stick blenders, cut slices, mince, you know, so all those kind of products in that preparation segment. The last one, which is not the least, are vac packers and sous vides.
Yeah.
So food preservation. So you can see
That's where I could, in my mind, is what I think about.
Yeah.
And it's
interesting, because actually sometimes when we talk to customers, they kind of like, or dealers, they kind of associate us and remember us for a segment of our family.
Yeah.
And it's rare, not all the time, they remember us for all of that.
All of it,
Which is kind of nice, because we've always got some business with some of the, you know, we don't just do one item or the other, it's a little bit of everything, so it's nice.
And you sell through distributors, is that the sort
only through distributors, and we're quite direct with that, because it's a much easier process for us as well.
Then in terms of yourself getting into food service equipment.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
Did you come into it, or did you fall into it, or
I was about to say there's some people who just fall into it, and I'm one of those. I mean, we've got people, ex-chef in the military. We've got an actual chef here today, still active, and I basically was in retail, a line manager for Tesco's for 5 years. Had enough. Wanted to work for a manufacturer. I went to those manufacturing people, Mars and Wrigley's, are the ones you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that.
A
food manufacturer. And pandemic happened, and I wanted change.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Aaron Lockhart. I was at Nisbet. I just wanted change.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know what they did. Mm. And that was my graduation, really, at Nisbet.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I've always represented a brand, you know, working for those kind of companies. So yeah. It made sense to kind of go with a manufacturing company representing a brand.
Yeah.
And obviously, when you're working with that company like that, you're going to know more the technical stuff, you know, how the components in the machine work and how the end user are using the product. So you get to know a little bit more. So I've gone from not knowing what a gastropan is, doing a full site survey for rack machines and, you know, over 5 years. So
how long have you been with Samick?
So it's now been 3 years with Samick. So yeah, we've grown quite nicely. We've just actually, my area has been cut in half. We've just recruited someone. So that area has grown quite nice over 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, I say welcome to the show. Thank you for giving us time off the show floor. Nigel, how are you? Well, welcome to the show. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Rafton. My name's Nigel Roddick. I work for a company called Marlowe Kitchen Fire Suppression Systems. We're the leading distributor, installer and maintainer of fire suppression, Ansell fire suppression systems in the UK. My background started off as an apprentice electrician, so a bit different to the chefs here.
Okay, yeah.
And then I moved into research and development work, and I've probably been in the fire industry now, fire protection or detection, for 35 years. I think the last 26 years has probably been devoted to the kitchen fire suppression side, which I enjoy immensely. I think it's a great industry to work in. There's a lot of really good and really nice people in this industry.
Yeah.
And we've tried to develop the way we do things to suit that market. So it's been quite an educational lesson going through the last 26 years, but it's been really good. And we're here at the show today on the Cedarbourne Village and see what this show brings.
Quite a long time in this sector of fire suppression.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, was it a conscious decision or you just kind of went into it? Or
no, to be honest, it was kind of, I think, soft said, I just fell into it.
Yeah.
But I liked the product, I liked the industry, the people that you work with, and it just proved very interesting. And we go from one restaurant to another. So,
right.
You know, you could be looking at basically a takeaway restaurant on a high street one day, to a Michelin-starred restaurant the next day. And so there's quite a lot of variance across the whole industry, which is good.
And you just do Ansell?
We just do Ansell. We do another brand as well called Amarex. We've started to do that now more and more.
But you lead with Ansell as a...
We lead with Ansell. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you. Welcome to the show and good to see you. So... I'll open it up now to a group discussion. So obviously we're here at HRC, and thank you for everyone for taking time off the show floor. So maybe I'll start with you. How's it been so far this morning? What sort of visitors are you seeing? What has it been, 4 or 5 hours so far, I think?
Yeah, I mean, the first hour was a bit slow, but then after, I think it picks up quite nicely. It was a nice, steady, conversations. I think I even sold something off the stands.
On the spot.
So that's always nice to when you get to. So it's quite positive. So, but the general consensus, what I'm speaking to everybody, they're saying that they're enjoying this year because they can get a true figure of the quality of customers who are coming. And I'm seeing that myself, the customers I'm speaking to. So I'm seeing more interesting conversations, rather than, the influx of people, and trying to figure out, is it a genuine lead or is it an interest? Where the conversations I've had so far this morning, they were quite interesting
and positive.
Yeah, so
that's good.
For ourselves, I think Greece is a strange topic. I'm in a country where I think
we've not had a great topic to be talking about.
If you have a need for it, you have an issue and you have a challenge, of course, you're looking. And if you came here specifically to look for, a grease supplier or a grease management solution, then, it's not necessarily at the top of everybody's thought process unless the water companies have been in. But, it's a great opportunity for myself to network back again with the distributor market and to catch up with old contacts you may not have seen. There's definitely been so far, it was sort of warming up a little bit as the day's gone on. I've seen a lot of colleagues today, and then there was a couple of contacts at the end there, just as it was going sort of 2 o'clock-ish. There was some end-user customers that were having some challenges with the water company and specifications.
Okay.
So, you know, that's always good because we have that knowledge and expertise to support there. So, you know, all in all so far, I always think, from my knowledge of the show, Monday's always slightly more...
Quieter
with, and it's more of the network of commercial distributors as opposed to end users, but it's hard to, you
know, I agree with that because actually I've got a lot of my customers or end users are coming on Tuesday. That I kind of
are you looking
agree.
For end users or dealers or what?
Well, I think it's specifying. I think for us, it's about specifying. We sell through the dealer market, so we want to then share back with them opportunities. But we want to continually grow the specification of the product and tell, you know, explain to them that there is an opportunity to walk away from block drain solutions. You know, those solutions are out there. You know, there's a lot of challenges, I think, with equipment in the industry today, whether or not it actually factors and works incorrectly as they need. And drains always tend to block on a Friday afternoon when they least want it. So,
that's the thing.
It's always on a Friday. It's never on a Monday when there's no customers in the restaurant.
And Ludo, from your perspective, how's it been? Everyone's been flocking around you for the shoe buns.
Oh, yeah. No, look, I like to show the people what we can do with that machine. Because it's really a good help for any chef. And until you understand and you see what you can do with it, you get the... But we got a great response in terms of people around. It's been really good. And I think it's my first time, as I say earlier, and I can see it's very professional. It's not people just here to, you know, have a look around. Yeah. It's people come here for a certain... They are on the mission. I can see that. And that's great to see that. Because you got a real conversation with them. It's, you can see, you can feel the patient, you know.
I think what HRC have been doing, and what I know what they've been doing, is when people apply for a badge to visit, they have to be approved. You don't just get it automatically issued.
Right.
They have to go through an approved process, which is to sort of stop this influx of people coming in that shouldn't necessarily
for
be
the
here.
For the free food and
not
drink.
Really in our industry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Free food and alcohol.
Yeah, that's a challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
And Nigel, for you, how's it been so far this morning?
So it's been quiet this morning, but that's not too unusual.
Mm.
And this is our first time of revisiting these types of shows. So we used to do them quite regularly years ago, but we found we weren't getting a great deal out of them because... Like Nick said with the Greeks, the fire suppression is not an exciting product for someone.
Yeah.
You know, you've got talented chefs like Ludo,
until you've got an issue.
And what we see in the HRC or these types of show is that there's a lot of catering and learning going on for chefs, which is really good.
Mm.
And probably not a lot of people focused on the facilities and the hard services and getting things working. And you're right. No one really wants a fire suppression system until the day that they wish they had. And
unfortunately, that is the case.
There's some alarming statistics out there where, you know, some of the businesses that have fires just don't reopen. 80% of them, I think.
Yeah, and we're seeing commercial fires rising.
Probably at least one a day.
Yeah.
So
really.
But, yeah. Coming back to the show, I think
I can speak with experience. My partner works for a lot of fire service.
Wow.
So
it's factual.
I hear all the stories of you see it, all the different fires, you know.
Yes, and
happening.
You know, some of them are really serious, especially if they expand into the ductwork, and then let's say you've got a listed building, how dramatic that can be, and the cost is huge. And like Nick said, I think the Monday is normally a quieter day. We wanted to give this a trial again, to be part of the Cedarbomb Village and be with some of the suppliers that have got other products, so we're not sitting on our own, and maybe we can gain an advantage from someone seeing Samick and then coming to see us.
Capture some other people.
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's not just in isolation.
So I think
that makes sense.
The next 2.5 days will give us a view. But the one thing that is good about this, we're seeing a lot of dealers that we work with regularly, and they're seeing us, if you like, their industry. So I think it just confirms our commitment to the hospitality sector.
Okay. I mean, it's a big question, but I'll ask it. You know, obviously we've got Host Milan, which is huge exhibition. It's like
absolutely
a whole city madness. And in the UK, there's a number of food service equipment exhibitions. Do you feel that, if we talk specifically about HRC, is there still a place for these sort of exhibitions? I mean, you're all exhibiting, so maybe I'm asking the wrong question. And why are they important? I mean, are they important? I don't know.
I think it's a difficult question to answer, isn't it? I mean, we were here last year without Cedarbond as
a standalone
as Grease Shield, yeah. And we had some opportunities for end users. I think it's to profile your brand continually in a place like HRC. I think it's important that if you have a brand and it's a large brand that needs to continue its awareness, I think there's still that place for that brand awareness.
Definitely.
I think it's definitely still, you know, customers coming through that may have had challenges with whatever scenario it may well be. I mean, I, as a former chef, as you know, I mean, I'm the Robo Cream. That's an amazing piece of equipment. I may not ever sell that myself, but I now know about it if someone's talking about it. And I think that we network as other individuals, it's very useful in the industry. And I think the eclectic mix of people that sit around Cedarmon this time, as Soph was saying, I think if we all work together, there's opportunities
more
to share, and the collaboration works rather than sort of standing out on your own. And I think that I think for us as a small, medium enterprise business that's growing, where do you position yourself into the market? How do a company, you know, how do we see everybody, you know, overnight? Well, we probably couldn't cope anyway, but we want to still grow the brand. So I think, you know, we'll have to wait and see. You know, that's how I'm feeling at the moment. Is it's definitely a place for it. I mean, you can see by the amount of people coming in, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can echo to that, to be honest with you. There's still a room for exhibitions like this at HRC. But I do feel that there is, I think a lot of the manufacturers' side a thing, it's more around return on investment. You're seeing the value in it. And I think the move that they've done this year has been, I think, a positive step. It's only early days, only half a day or two-thirds of the day, but it's quite positive because we're getting quality conversations. We're seeing as well small dealers. I mean, like Lockhart and these bits are doing their own ones. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing small. So they're jumping onto that and doing their own little expos. But there is always going to be a space for this because brand awareness is important. You know, you rightfully said, you know, Nick, where we had the first day we were talking to other manufacturers that, or, you know, we colleagues or we know, so we're building relationships with the dealers that we already know. Mm. But then the rest of the time, it's about, I guess, bringing in new customers in that wouldn't know your brand.
Yeah.
And you can only do that if you're at the forefront of their mind.
Definitely.
You know?
Okay.
So, yeah, there's always going to be a place for it. I think the biggest thing would be the return on investment. What can you actually get out of it?
I guess
it's hard to quantify.
It's difficult to quantify, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because as Nick rightly said, there's other add-ons around collaboration or whatever.
And that's why it's a great opportunity for us as well, you know, with partnering with the Cedarbond family, you know, doing it as well. We still get a foot inside, but the return, the investment is smaller.
Less
smaller.
Risk.
Yeah.
Less risk.
And we can still have that presence. So, yeah.
Okay. And from your perspective, I mean, this is your first time to HRC, so you don't maybe have any of the...
It's hard to
historical. Some of us have got different opinions.
Yeah,
I'm
very quiet at the moment.
No, but it's interesting to hear your perspective.
It's a good view. I've been to Rimini in Italy recently. That's the last one I've did, and it's pretty the same size, I would say. And I found it very full, as we said. It's not select. I think here it's a little bit more select. And
more
quality people, like people just, they wanted to know. And even if, you know, Samik, for example, that I work with two machines. Now, my next, or today or tomorrow, I'll be looking at more detail. Because here I've got a guy just next to me that's be able to help me on that. I've got two machines. I'm sure I don't use them as much as I should.
Yeah.
But like, it's all to get the detail as well. You might not buy something, but you will get all the detail of the machinery because you'll find so many good things that you could do with it and you wouldn't know before, you know? So it's really into detail and understand from a certain point. So it's good to keep those happening, you know.
And do you think shows like this still have a... Are they still relevant to have shows like this?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, cool. Big time.
Okay,
big time.
Well, that's a good endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're learning about it again and seeing where we fit into that. Mm. I think Soph was right. It's about the return on investment.
Yeah.
Brand awareness is key. And, you know, we're synonymous with the fire suppression side. So we want to get that name. And I think one example from someone who came and spoke to me earlier, it was a guy who was running 3 takeaway restaurants, and he didn't really have a need. He was more interested in the 3 merchandise, to be perfectly honest. But then we started to speak about his business, and it became apparent he'd had 2 fires.
Oh, wow.
And he completely missed what we did. And then we started to talk about it. Now, we're going to have an opportunity to go out, visit that gentleman, provide a quotation to him. Who knows where that will go?
Yeah.
But we would have never met.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So the only reason we're talking is that we're at an exhibition that he's come to.
That's positive, isn't it?
And HRC has been the route for that. And I think I may be old school in the sales world, but there's that analogy. There's always that 1 or 2 inquiries you get from a show that makes it all worthwhile. So you could have 3 days of feeling fairly vulnerable. I mean, there's probably 2 inquiries that will go, that's my return on investment.
There's an old saying in sales that you chase the no's, not the yeses. So eventually you'll get a good customer.
Yes.
You get a deal.
I mean, it was a bit of a loaded question because, you know, there's no surprises. I'm an ambassador for HRC, but I think they've done a lot of work this year in changing the show from last year, from my perspective, moving the food service equipment right to the front of the show, up near S1, which has been a big impact, changing the way they vet the customers, introducing things like Cedar Bond, FEA, Pavilion.
Yeah. To be fair, they have done a lot because I remember, and this is the thing sometimes, when you get phone calls and they're asking for feedback, you don't think it's going to materialise.
Are they listening now?
But actually, in 1 year, they made it happen.
Yeah.
And I was honest with that feedback, and they've made those changes. And I don't think so.
And it's still a journey.
It's a journey, but it seems very positive. So
And I think as well,
the application, the badge scanner, and that, you know, how that's been rebuilt through that's sort of really groundbreaking for them at the moment, because you've got the details on there. You know, it's genuine. It's scanning, and then it's giving you that opportunity to actually plan an email meeting from it as well.
That's good.
I haven't actually
there's
had
a lot
the
on there. To be fair, I'm not actually. There would be nice to have a little video.
There's a lot on it. It looks like someone's really sat and thought about that as a business tool.
We tend to forget about the skillery, the competitions that are going on, which we're kind of all supporting that as well, which is critical to our industry anyhow. It's not just about equipment. We always focus on equipment.
I think from back in the day when Hotel Olympia was held across at the
Earl's Court.
Earl's Court, of course. Yeah, I remember my early days as a chef as having done actually live gatto deck, because I liked pastry. And I have those memories of the light. You know, there's so much happens there for the young chefs coming into the industry today. And if we lose that would be a shame. I haven't had the opportunity to walk around, but I remember the days of the fat carving and the chocolate and so forth that was synonymous for the chefs wanted to be here to showcase themselves. And I'm sure it's here somewhere, you know.
It is just the back of where you are.
It's a good combination as well to have. So it's for everyone, really. A bit of social network, and then you see a bit of a heart in an industry. You know, like the Sierra in Lyon. You know, that kind of show. You got so much to see, and then but you're there as well to work as okay. What can I find to make my company better? What machinery will help the guy in terms of labor and
essentially that's what it is. It's all about providing solutions, saving on costs, labour. That's what they essentially do.
It gives you the opportunity to see that machinery, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we refer to the Robo Cream, of the fact that you can make choux pastry in a machine, and you know, for the chefs amongst us that know how difficult choux pastry is to make, and the, you know, the wrist ache, and then there's the, we're going to cook it and dry it out well enough, but yeah. there's the human element of us getting it wrong when you unbone it or it's still soggy inside. But to have a machine that's doing that today is amazing. And the hand tools, of course, from Samick, and we look at what's available to us today, it's completely different.
It gives you as well a little bit for the employee as well to, I'm not saying it's a boring job to do a choux pastry, but like it could be after a while, you know, so you have more time to fine us and to work on a decor and all that. So in our industry, for sure, like, it's all about labor cost. In UK, in Ireland, it's always been an issue. And if we can reduce that, so we need to think about those machinery to help us, you know. The cooking process with sous vide, all that just bring into the industry big time, you know.
I think it also gives an opportunity for people. Sometimes if you were looking to maybe open up a new restaurant, and we said, is there still the opportunity or the need? If you were a new business person coming into this industry, and you can come and see how the Rationale chefs are working, or Retigo, whichever ovens, you can pick up a piece of equipment and see it. If you were trying to do that all online, I think, you know, this is where the mistakes happen, isn't it? When it's dropped on a doorstep and there's your new combination oven, whereas here you may get some ideas of how big that piece of equipment is
and what's needed
and what's actually required to make that. I think that's important, isn't it?
Okay, well, that concludes this part of the podcast. We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to discuss about quality equipment. We're going to move away a bit from HRC, talk about equipment, service, cedar bond. I'm going to put you a little bit of pressure as well, so we'll come back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Cedar Bond, a UK buying and marketing consortium for the food service equipment sector. For decades, Cedar Bond has connected dealers, suppliers and partners to drive value, collaboration and long-term success across the industry. Cedar Bond is proud to be part of HRC 2026, the UK's flagship hospitality and food service show. To find out more, visit hrc.co.uk.
Okay, welcome back. Obviously, I'm still here with the four gentlemen, and we're going to talk about sort of why we should buy quality products and service and everything around that. So, Sof, maybe I'll start with you. You know, obviously, we've got different prices of products. You know, you can get a vacuum packer cheap as you like, and you get one, if we talk about that specifically, one really expensive. Why is it important? Does it matter?
It does matter, but at the end of the day, I think sometimes the customers see a price point and doesn't necessarily understand the difference between a catering equipment and a catering equipment. As far as they're concerned, it's all kitchen catering professional equipment, and they don't understand necessarily there is a price point for the quality, and that price point comes for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the challenge with online, with imports and all that stuff. We get so many times customers who have bought things, and with fire regulation, they got, you know, they burnt their restaurant down, or something's happened, and it's only when that's happened they've come and bought something a bit more sturdier or more quality.
Yeah.
So is it important? It is very important.
Okay.
But there's always going to be a budget and the time of a business, you know, where they need. And the best thing would be to do, I would say, if you're tight on a budget, is really consult with the manufacturer and understand, does this fit your need? Because there's also some people will buy equipment, think it would do, I don't know, 1,000 kilos an hour, and it's only like a domestic appliance with a metal shell. It was never going to withstand, you know, to its custom. So I guess that, and this is what these shows are about a little bit. I know we want to step away from that conversation, but that's what it's about, talking to people, understanding
the product,
and we can definitely recommend. And when we recommend, because obviously we're a manufacturer, we want to make sure that they've got the right kit. We don't want them to come to us, you know, saying they've got problems or with the machine. We want to make sure we solve them the right machine for their needs.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, Nigel, does it come into your sector at all with fire suppression? I mean,
Yeah, very much so. I think.
Does it? There is still sort of budget.
You will get as the market for fire suppression is actually growing, you will get more and more companies who are trying to break into that market. But one of the downsides of that is that the quality and the backup from that company may not be there. And the truth is you're probably only going to know that system does what it states it's going to do when you actually
need it. Which could be too late.
With a fire, that's kind of a one-shot event. And also it's...
Is there like a British standard or anything for
Yes, so there was finally a British standard introduced in 2017, BS16282, Part 7, and that deals specifically with the fire suppression side. So that was great. That led to more standards to be able to be pinned to it.
Yeah.
But the manufacturer has to do fire testing standards and accreditations that they have to apply and they have to get it done to. And some of those are quite stringent. And again, that's good. It's all positive. Yeah. But when you're working in the hospitality sector, the other thing that you get to realise is if that system, you don't want random activations. You don't want the food service to be stopped going out to the customers. So you actually need a really robust system that sits there that lets the chefs keep cooking and the trade still going.
And when you say random activation, what is that?
Well, you know, sometimes it can be it can be the different types of detection that's used, and maybe it's been put too close to a heat source, so it's been designed incorrectly. And that heat source is building up, and then you get
activate.
It.
And what actually happens then? It
just discharges all the wet chemical liquid over the entire cooking surface.
So that's the kitchen out of use.
Yeah, you're probably going to be out of use for maybe 4 to 6 hours whilst it's being cleaned, recharged.
Yeah, that's quite a big issue then if it goes off.
We try and get it so that. You know, they may miss one service, but they're back again for the next service. But a lot of that will be down to the cleaning regime.
Yeah.
But again, if you're looking at maybe some of the cheaper budget systems that come in, you're not guaranteed what they're like, and they've got no history within that market. So you really don't know. Yes, you're saving money on your capital expense, but you really don't know how that's going to
pan out
in the future.
Yeah. Okay.
And you'll probably find all those businesses online who are selling their equipment.
I mean, they tend to be imports that are coming in from different, and they look for a distributor. But again, they get a distributor because this is a cheaper product. But aesthetically, it's not great, some of them. And some of the money that we all know that's been spent on commercial kitchens, the last thing you want is some eyesore that's put on the wall.
Actually, to be fair, that's what I've seen. I've seen projects, they spend hundreds of thousands of pounds and often it's filled up with countertop equipment, which are the cheap online stuff. Which is bizarre, isn't it?
Well, the journey with Greece, you know, as it wanders over, you know, there's so many solutions in the industry today for... you know, with the supposed tag of grease management, and the challenges are that there's this belief that there's no regulation, and you know, unfortunately there is a regulation, and it is the 1991 Water Industry Act, as it's a criminal offence to knowingly discharge anything that may do harm to the sewers and the waterways.
Okay.
So, of course, you know, there's this confusion as to where that sits. And then we've got the confusion around sizing. And, you know, if we all go back into where, you know, into catering, and actually it was 1884 when a grease trap was designed, it was external. And today here we are where the water companies, because they're not sure how to mitigate the grease going into the drains, have gone through processes of saying, let's put smaller traps in, but unfortunately they're undersized. So, you know, we go through that process of, you know, who's at right, who's at wrong. Ultimately, what's happening in the industry today is that clients will buy, say, a 100-litre passive grease trap. It won't be sized correctly. It's growing bacteria continually while it's in the kitchen. Should that be in a kitchen? That's not for me to say. I mean, that is rhetorical, and we'll say that way. But as a, you know, as a veteran chef or as a former chef, you know, would I want something in my kitchen that was growing bacteria? I don't think so, and I don't think I'd want it in my dishwasher area. But, you know, we move forward. There are a lot of different solutions out there today.
Is there some sort of standard, British standard, or not really? Or is it, unfortunately,
not at this stage. There are standards for measuring how many times grease can be dropped through a machine. Yeah. And the legislation is
just you need to put something, but no one's saying...
They're saying they should be doing at the moment. Yeah. So, you know, when we look at... you know, where does the grease shield sit? You know, it sits with we remove the animal fat, and ultimately we have a lot of certification testings. I think we got to 97 tests of 8 pounds of pork lard.
Okay.
So the test is around about 8 pounds of pork lard, and we've got to 97 and we're still only discharging 50 parts per million. So we're quite proud of that. Mm. You know, as a solution into a kitchen, you know, a block drain leads on to what? And if I use a quick example, I was at a Turkish restaurant a few weeks ago, and the pipe was an old Victorian basement. Kitchen had been put in the basement. The pipe went under the floor to a sewer that dropped through into those Victorian sewers. They couldn't get to the blockage. He hadn't put a grease shield. He hadn't put anything in except for, I believe, there was dosing. Hmm. And that blockage cost £4,000 to suck out because they had to send one of those sucker tankers. And it wasn't just a standard suck out tanker. It was a whole day's work to get in to draw the blockage away. Yeah. So, you know, when you're buying equipment, do you buy the patch on it? And hopefully that'll go away. The water companies are actively attending sites and looking for breaches in the Act, and they are advising you must do something. It depends on who it sits in, whether it falls into DEFRA, the water company. There's a lot of challenges, but you know, we know that we can stop those block drains, and ultimately that's the important factor. The other solutions that exist today don't allow the removal of that grease in full capacity as a grease shield for up to 24 hours a day. So,
Ludo, from your perspective, I don't know how many other companies make... I mean, I know there's Gelato machines. How many other make chew pastry and... Is there competitors and...
So, yes, we do. But funny enough, because they were so busy selling into the French market, they're calling the one machine a day. And that's why I came into UK about last year. And we had see some competitor, but it's, do you have the service? Because service is the most important. Do we have the right person? And we do. David Annecy has been the creator of, like, he's bringing the machine to UK and Ireland, but he is maintenance, and he will fix the machine if anything happens. So I think people need to see that as well. You can buy online, you can buy cheaper. Yes, of course, go ahead. That's what I told people. Yeah, go. Have your own experience. Because you come back to me. You will come back to me. You pay service for something, and then, you know.
Of course.
And it's great as well. It's relationship as well, because they never let you down. You know, when you have a good relationship with a distributor, they're always good to
look after you.
Yeah, look after you. And they're on the phone, you know, 24 hours, right, guys?
Yeah, that's 24.
No family life, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got about 10 minutes or so left. I'm just asking you about Cedarbond, if that's all right, because they're kindly sponsoring this podcast today. Nigel, you're obviously, you're all on the Cedarbond Pavilion or...
The family village.
Yeah, village, I don't know what we're calling it. But Nigel, why is Cedarbond important?
And I think it gives us that insight into the dealers within the catering and hospitality industry. And there's a benefit for them to use us, and there's a benefit that we get in them coming to us, and that is really the word is spread between, well, within the Cedarbond organisation.
Mm.
And it's like everything else. The closer you get with people, the more they know about you, the more that they trust. And then what Ludo said there about the service, you know, they know that they're going to call you and you're going to respond And that's all good. And it's about maintaining that relationship. And I think this year, with what they've done with the village, if I'm honest, this is the only reason we'd be at HRC.
Okay.
Because it was an experiment for us to join this. And it gives us a view over these 3 days of, is this the right type of exhibition for us to be at?
Yeah, and is it worth it?
And is it worth it? But, yeah, it's hugely worthwhile to be part of Cedarbond.
And so, I mean, have you seen a change in Cedarbond? You've been with Samak, you said 3 years.
Yes.
I don't know how long Samak's been with Cedarbond.
Oh, so they've been for a long time.
Have you seen a change in the last 18 months or so? I mean, this is quite new for them to do this, what they're doing.
Yes, I was going to say, this has been quite new to do the HRC, so that's a new experiment, I guess, for both parties. But in general, Cedarbond is a great experience because it's a community where we can, you know, instead of seeing all our dealers over a quarter, we can get to see them all together, majority of them, you know, all at one time. But today, with the HRC, again, it's a great opportunity to be present without, you know, having that heavily investment, but still seeing everyone there and communicating with the end users and still, you know, and supporting the industry.
Okay.
So I think it's a good move. It's a good move because you're, you know, making a space and pulling together, you know, other manufacturers and giving the other, you know, opportunity, you know, for other businesses to you know, to show what they can do, I suppose. Yeah.
Ludo, from your perspective, Cedarbond, what's your view?
It's great, very professional, guys, you know. I love the stand and then also the way the machinery, they all high-end machinery, basically, or, you know, services being all around. So it's good to see that. So if somebody can come here, he'll have a good view just going into us, to the show, you know. If you open an hotel or restaurant, you'll have 99% job done, you know, if you're looking around. But yeah, it's great.
Okay. And Nick, I mean, Cedarbond, they're a not-for-profit company limited by guarantee. So like all the money they make goes back to their members. I mean, is that important, do you think, for you as a supplier
customers? As a supplier, it gives there's a lot of benefits with you know, Cedarbond, with the way that the payment structures are set up and how we work with the Cedarbond members. And I think, as Toff and Nigel were saying, you know, it gives us that opportunity to feel part of a family. And I think it's definitely for us as a company, we've seen a massive uplift in engagement under the new, you know, Lee style, and you know, if we refer to Lee, you know, individually, you know, since he's come in and changed reporting and methods and state and work that's going on within behind the scenes, it's made that much more focused for us as a business to Cedarbond, and I think that's really important. So from a supplier point of view, we have an understanding of, because we're not here to push sales, and I don't think that's we're here to support and present, and I think that's the way that we would look at providing a solution. I think if you're a distributor coming in, looking at it from that point of view, then there's the opportunity to see, well, okay, I can work with companies I wish to work with. I can see areas where I can develop and grow my business. There's a core set of suppliers which are all manufacturers. I believe most of us are all manufacturers, importers of quality equipment that can take away the headache. We've all got a lot of expertise, I think, around the table here today. When you look at the skill sets and the expertise that's available, there's a wealth of knowledge and experience in here. And if we can, you know, overlay that onto other people's businesses, I think that's what we want to do. And Cedarbond allows us to do that, you know, especially with the younger guys coming into the industry and new people coming in, of who do we speak to? And I know that here for us, at, you know, at Grease Shield, we'll take away the headache of grease management and give them that support. And I know in my previous life working for a distributor, you know, Nigel was always there when I did, oh, do I need some help with them, you know, what do I need to do, and he just took all the headache away out of it. It was absolutely the total panacea for
because that's exactly how I decided to go into the manufacturing side, because they were so supportive and educational.
Absolutely. And you know, if someone becomes that panacea for you, where it makes it simple, then you know you want to keep going back to them with the right solution, don't you, and get that solution. And that's, I think, the Cedarbond family gives you that environment.
I think, like you said, Nick, we've seen there's probably more of a sales drive now and a sales focus in Cedarbond, which is helping the dealers and helping the suppliers. So it's working together, and it feels good at the moment. So
Positive. Okay. Well, the last bit, we're nearly at the end. You've all done amazing so far, so thank you. We're just going to have a quick fire round. So I'm just looking for really short, snappy answers. And I'm just going to rattle through them. So I'll start with you, Nick. Best thing about HRC?
Great opportunity to catch up with colleagues.
Cool.
And, yep.
Networking, I think. Definitely.
Networking.
Yeah.
Like that.
I think, yeah, that's a key one. Yeah.
I think it's just all the key manufacturers, all the key people you want to see under one roof, really.
Yep. Worst thing about a trade show?
Standing on your feet.
Yeah.
Okay. Good one.
Close, move on.
You can't copy.
The price of a bottle of water.
That's a good one.
Walking with hangover people.
It's true. Not today, but maybe tomorrow.
Maybe.
Surprise. Good one, that.
Nick.
I got to say, it's the sore feet. It's
a killer.
For me,
isn't
it's the feet. It's the feet.
You can never get used to it. No matter how many trade shows you do.
Yeah, it's just feet. My feet are killing me today.
One stand everybody should visit.
Oh, this is tough, isn't it? For me, I think it's always the innovation throughout the combination oven market.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because it's my first day, but I'm hopefully going to spend a bit of time tomorrow to visit all my old colleagues and networking again.
Okay, back to, yeah.
We supply our food, great chocolate companies are there, great purees and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'll decide tomorrow, actually.
Okay.
It's quite a difficult one to answer, but I'd actually say the best thing to do is to research what you want before you go.
Yeah.
And then
have a bit of a plan.
You're targeting what you need to see rather than going around trying to find it.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been at my stand pretty much all day, so I've not had I've been working hard. It's been positive.
Come to some extent.
So, yeah.
Come to us.
Yeah, come to some extent. No, but, to be fair, to be honest with you, yeah, like you said, to be fair, you know, do your homework before. Yeah. And there isn't, because sometimes you go to a company and you don't realise what solutions they can provide.
Yeah.
Sometimes they you know, having meaningful conversations, I didn't realise you had the problem to my solution. Hmm. Can I have more details? But yeah, sometimes just it's not the main leading brands that will actually give you the answers. It's going
other
and having
brands. Yeah,
having
yeah.
around and yeah. having chats and meaningful conversations. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go slightly off piece here, but best city in the world for food, in your opinion, or which you like for food, not necessarily.
Best city for food. Oh, me, it has to be Malaysia.
Okay.
And I'm biased. So my wife is from Malaysia.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Nasi lemak, but I love Malaysian food. You got the nasi lemak, rangdan.
Yeah.
It's really, really nice food.
I have to say Japan, Osaka, I love Osaka, I lived there for a while, and San Sebastian in Europe.
Okay.
Big time.
This is probably going to throw you, much as as you know, I'm married to a Thai and I love Thai food and I've lived overseas, but you know what? Rome.
Rome. Okay.
For its earthy, the old Roman, you know, and the real get down into that sort of dirty Roman, you know, when I say the old style
Italian
of Roman
food,
cooking, Italian food, yeah.
That was actually a similar theme, but Milan. Some quality Italian restaurants. So.
Okay. Well, I've got one final question for you all, just short, if you can. Nigel, at the end of this 3 days, what will success look like for you, do you hope? An order for 25 fire systems? I'm joking.
It'll be a return on investment, but that's coupled with just being here for people that we work with as well. So there's the relationship with existing customers, but return on investment's key.
Okay.
I think there's two sides to it. I think, you know, if you plant enough seeds, you won't get the investment, you know, straight away. But if you plant enough seeds, you'll get enough customers come and speak to you down the line. But we're here today with Cedarbond. So it's about, you know, that partnership and supporting them, you know, with what they're doing and what we're doing. So I think what good look like for us would be here present and keeping us busy talking to people and getting the name out.
Yeah, well, I would say bring some knowledge into the machine. Like, as we say earlier, it's a lot of people won't have a clue or won't understand the machine until you start seeing and practicing and understanding how much saving we can do. So, yeah, I hope we get a lot of people understanding more and more and then having a good crack as well, you know? Cool. A bit of fun.
Okay. Nick, for you?
For me, it would be a successful chairing of a group, you know, a national account group, essentially, would to be looking with challenges on existing Greece
a
management.
A few units, yeah.
And to want to come in and talk about, you know, a new solution and how do we, you know, how do we work that solution into our estate. That would be a success.
That would be a great success. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that concludes the podcast. Thank you all for joining me and taking time off the show floor.
Thank you.
I hope thanks for the invite.
Yeah, thank you for the invite.
I hope you all enjoyed it.
It was really good.
Yeah, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
First podcast.
Yeah. To be fair, first podcast. It was okay. Really nice.
Best hour I had today.
You have to say that. I'm not behind the beers. They're free tonight at the after hours.
Yes, they are.
I keep saying that. Best hour.
Okay. Well, anyway, so thank you. That concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. And as we've heard there before, suppliers from Cedarmond. We've heard about Sunmec and all their solutions. Ludo talking about the product they're importing and bringing to market for gelato and choux pastry, etc. Obviously, Nick with Grease Shield solutions and Nigel with fire suppression. Thank you for bearing with us. Have you heard any noise in the background? It's because we're in a meeting room right looking on City Airport, so you might have heard some aeroplanes or air conditioning. Next, coming up on the next episode, we're sitting down in a French restaurant in the heart of Mayfair, and we're going to be talking about the Alley Group and Moreno, and also cooking a French restaurant that specialises in fish in the heart of Mayfair. If you've got any comments, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.